A young woman stands on an abandoned farm in New Zealand, photographing overgrown fields and calculating crop yields. Within minutes, a stranger who spotted her from his private plane has infiltrated her phone, reading her texts, tracking her movements, and preparing to reshape her entire reality. This is not a dystopian fantasy. It's the opening gambit of Eleanor Catton's Burnham Wood, a novel that asks, what happens when environmental idealists collide with surveillance capitalism? When Barack Obama included this book on his 2023 summer reading list, he recognized what critics worldwide had already discovered, a thriller that transforms Shakespeare's Macbeth into a meditation on power, complicity, and the price we pay for compromising our principles. The guerrilla gardening collective at the novel's heart believes they're planting seeds of revolution. They don't yet realize they're being cultivated themselves. Mira Bunting leads Burnham Wood, a collective planting crops on unused land without permission. Part activism, part survival, entirely illegal. They've scraped by on donations and determination, living anti-capitalist principles while barely making rent. Then she meets Robert Lemoyne, an American billionaire who catches her trespassing on his property. Instead of calling police, he offers something more dangerous: unlimited land access and funding to transform their operation. The moral trap springs shut immediately. Mira, who built her identity resisting corporate power, finds herself drawn to both Lemoyne's resources and the man himself. She calls it pragmatism. Accepting his help will amplify impact and prove their model works at scale. But beneath these rationalizations lurks uncomfortable truth. She's compromising everything Burnham Wood stands for because it feels good to be taken seriously by someone powerful. What makes Lemoyne chilling is how he weaponizes intimacy through surveillance. Within 20 minutes of spotting Mira, he hacks her phone, gaining complete access to her data and communications. He monitors her with drones, creating invisible surveillance she never perceives. By studying her digital footprint, he learns her vulnerabilities and desires before they speak. When they meet, he already knows her name, history, and exactly which emotional buttons to push. His God complex surfaces when flying, experiencing a profound sense of his own proportion and a holy sense of having pilgrimaged. This quasi-religious language exposes how technology and wealth replace traditional meaning. When you can monitor anyone, manipulate information, and buy your way out of consequences, ordinary ethical constraints cease to apply. Lemoyne's offer splits Burnham Wood, particularly between Mira and Tony Gallo, her former friend and occasional lover. Tony erupts, "We're getting into bed with the enemy." He condemns Lemoyne's wealth as blood money, insisting billionaires fundamentally undermine solidarity. For Tony, principles must remain untainted. Mira counters that Tony doesn't grasp their daily struggle to sustain the movement. If partnering with Lemoyne helps more people and creates sustainable food systems, isn't that worth it? Tony's uncompromising stance protects integrity but risks irrelevance. Mira's pragmatism could expand their reach but opens the door to compromise. The relationship between Mira and Shelley adds complexity. Shelley initially supports Lemoyne partly for Mira's approval. When Shelley realizes Mira has romantic feelings for Lemoyne, jealousy transforms their ideological differences into something deeply personal. The novel reveals that political movements are shaped by human emotions: jealousy, ambition, desire for approval, as much as by principles. Deception saturates Burnham Wood, shaping everything while remaining invisible. Lemoyne's entire presence in New Zealand is built on lies, telling the Darvishes he's a survivalist building a bunker while actually extracting rare earth minerals worth trillions. He's manipulated mercenaries into believing they're working for the CIA when they're participating in an unauthorized, environmentally devastating mining operation. Mira's deceptions are more complex, often directed inward. She justifies her attraction to Lemoyne and willingness to compromise Burnham Wood's principles through elaborate rationalizations, framing decisions as necessary sacrifices while motivated by personal ambition and romantic attraction. After becoming complicit in covering up a death, she imagines scenarios where she's portrayed as victim rather than perpetrator. Shelley's deceptions escalate horrifically. After accidentally killing Owen Darvish with the collective's van while on acid, she attempts to normalize the event by claiming she was simply leaving for a job interview, revealing the extreme mechanisms we employ to avoid confronting our worst actions. The novel suggests deception isn't merely a moral failing, but a psychological necessity. We construct narratives that allow us to live with our compromises. Yet these self-protective fictions eventually collide with truth, often with devastating consequences. When Owen Darvish unexpectedly returns and is accidentally killed by Shelley, Lemoyne swiftly convinces Mira they must stage an accident. They move the body, erase evidence, and fabricate a story about him driving off a cliff. This cover-up marks Mira's point of no return. She's no longer bending principles, but complicit in covering up a death. The psychological toll is immediate: paralyzing shock, hours of motionless sitting, desperate attempts to distract herself with a jigsaw puzzle of golden retriever puppies, an image of innocence contrasting sharply with her actions. Shelley's response differs. Still processing the trauma, she experiences time as fractured and looping, repeatedly reliving the impact. Her mind creates defenses, counting obsessively, pretending the accident hasn't happened if she remains still. Complicity erodes their sense of self and connection to others. Their friendship transforms into mutual guilt and suspicion. When Mira offers Shelley the executive director position, it's not generosity, but self-preservation, ensuring Shelley would take the blame if discovered. The novel's climax brings all threads together in a devastating finale, questioning whether justice is possible amid profound power imbalances. After discovering Tony hiding in the forest with evidence of Lemoyne's environmental crimes, Mira experiences fleeting hope. Perhaps exposing his greater crimes could balance her complicity, but Lemoyne captures them both. Lady Darvish's unexpected arrival represents another form of justice. Having pieced together the truth about her husband's death, she confronts Lemoyne with a rifle. In a moment of transcendent calm, remembering Owen's instruction, "Breathe out before you shoot. At the bottom of the breath, you're steadier than at the top," she kills Lemoyne with a shot between the eyes. This vigilante justice briefly suggests individual moral courage might prevail against systemic corruption. Yet Lemoyne's driver immediately shoots Lady Darvish, revealing the limits of individual action against organized power. Tony's final act, setting fire to the leaching pits in Korowai National Park, represents yet another ambiguous form of justice. As he drags his broken body through the bush and ignites the mining site, he hopes someone will see the smoke and investigate. This desperate act aims to expose Lemoyne's crimes, yet it causes further ecological damage. Even well-intentioned resistance can have destructive consequences. The novel refuses resolution or redemption. We never learn whether Tony's fire exposes Lemoyne's operation, whether characters survive, or whether justice is achieved. This ambiguity reflects the novel's complex moral vision. In a world where power, technology, and wealth are so unevenly distributed, conventional notions of justice may be inadequate or impossible. In Shakespeare's Macbeth, Birnam Wood comes to Dunsinane when soldiers camouflage themselves with branches, humans disguised as nature. This image captures the novel's deepest insight. We cannot separate our treatment of the natural world from our treatment of each other. The logic that justifies exploiting ecosystems justifies exploiting people. Birnam Wood offers no easy answers, but it asks essential questions. How do we maintain integrity while engaging with corrupt systems? When does pragmatism become complicity? Can we accept help from those whose values oppose ours without being co-opted? The novel suggests our individual compromises mirror and enable broader exploitation. Just as Lemoyne rationalizes environmental destruction through cost-benefit analyses, Mira justifies moral compromises through utilitarian reasoning. We all tell ourselves stories about why our particular compromise is necessary. Perhaps the forest coming to Dunsinane isn't about nature fighting back. It's about how our exploitation of the world turns us against each other. We use noble causes as camouflage for baser motives. In an age of climate crisis and digital surveillance, Burnham Wood challenges us to examine our complicity in systems of exploitation, reminding us that no amount of technological control or wealth can insulate us from consequences.